for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 297 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week features the return of Jeff Parker, a terrific writer who is currently scripting much of the Future Quest series for DC Comics, which I totally adore. I had the chance recently at Baltimore Comic Con, which took place about a week ago, to talk with him about that series. So I took advantage of that to find out some things about what he thinks of the heroes that he's writing and what we can expect from that book in the near future. Since I'm talking with Jeff, I thought what I'd do is I'd re-air his previous chat with me where he talked about working on Batman 66, Aquaman, and a few other projects that I think you can still access and I think is worth your while to get. We'll start out with the new interview and then we'll wrap up with his chat in the past. Be sure to listen to both because he's got lots of good information that I'm sure you're going to enjoy hearing. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get to it. All right, we're here at Baltimore Comic Con, and I'm talking with creator Jeff Parker, who does many wonderful things, including Future Quest. How are you enjoying the convention here at Baltimore?
It is the best convention. I'm having a great time.
Great, great. Let's talk about Future Quest, because as a fan of the Herculoids and Birdman and all those good characters, Space Ghost, I really enjoyed the series. It was such a great year for me to be able to read that. Oh, and now that you're continuing on, talk about how the series came to be. Were you involved in the origination of it? Did they come to you after they had what they wanted to do? How did that happen?
They came to me in a really great, flashy way. Dan DiDio just sent me an email saying, "I'm about to send you something. Don't share it." And this was right before Baltimore Comic Con 2 years ago. And all the email was no text. It was just this great big drawing Darwin Cook had done of all those characters together. And I was like, what? You know, and then he got me on the phone and said, you know, he had been talking to Darwin about how to do this. They had the rights to start using all of the Hanna-Barbera stuff in their comics. And they wanted to do a big event that brought in the 60s action adventure heroes. And I believe Darwin was the one who said that, you know, to bring in me and Evan Shaner. Because he had read the Flash Gordon miniseries. And thought, it's like, okay, they did it with that. You know, the King Features characters, they can do it again. So Evan was totally into it too. And a few days later, I came out to this show, and Darwin was here. You know, it was his last show. And he and I went outside, and we stood out in the sun and just kind of hammered out the basics of what would become the overall plot. Well, we had, like, he told me some ideas he had of just some interesting scenes, like the whole find, you know, Johnny and Haji zooming around in the jungle and seeing a spaceship crash, and it's the Phantom Cruiser and stuff like that. And it was all great, and I was like, okay. So I went back on my flight home to Portland, Oregon, and I wrote up what would be just the overall plot that brings in the creature Omnicron and makes it all tie together. And then he liked it, and he helped me beat it into a real pitch to show all the executives. And then we were finally ready to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So talk about the characters, because you pretty much used all the ones from the Saturday mornings. And some of them got revised, like Birdman got a different costume. Yeah. Mitor was changed to a black person. How did those changes come about? Was that something you wanted to do? Was DC okay with that? How did that happen?
Yeah, we put it all in the pitch, and they signed off on all of it. It was, we wanted to make it a little broader interest. Everything in the early 60s was aimed at little white boys, you know? So much so that, like, there's no moms. There's a weird batch of dead moms and dad scientists around. You know, nothing for girls to glom onto. You know, nothing for kids of color to glom onto. Except, actually, Johnny Quest had Haji. And I, for years, I would get lots of guys coming up to me, you know, who are saying, like, Haji was super important to me. Like, you know, whenever me and my friends would play, I'd play Haji because I was black or I was Indian or whatever. You know, they saw that as their kind of end, you know, their point of view character. That's why I wanted to bring in a new character, Ty, who would become the modern age Mitor. And he's not, we didn't change him, he's just a legacy Mitor. And he meets the original Mitor at one point in the story, which I really enjoyed. So that was super fun for me. And I wanted to bring in, I like the idea of Johnny and Haji just making a new friend. Because you want to remind everybody they're kids, you know, and like they can't be too adult in any of the stuff they're doing, or it kind of takes away from their sense of adventure. When it gets very adult, that's where you got Race Bannon to come in and shoot things, you know. And same thing, we kind of beefed up some roles. Like what I did change on Frankenstein Jr. was to bring in his mom as the scientist who built the robot. I was like, it'd be nice to have a mom figure in here. And even Johnny kind of, you know, sees her as one. So that way, I felt like it was getting some more balance in it. But I wasn't changing any of the original characters. Because it's like, yeah, I know people are attached to them. We added a girl to the Impossibles. And that was almost more out of the fact that it's like, the three guys playing guitars, somebody needs to play drums. You know, let's mix up what they play. Somebody can play bass. This doesn't have to, a band doesn't work this way.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, were you happy with the response? Because,
oh, yeah.
You know, sometimes it's you're a little scared when you go back and you touch classic stuff that people have memories. I mean, to me, I was so excited about it. I was thrilled. I loved every issue. I couldn't wait for the next one to come out. You were happy with how people responded to the things?
I've got nothing but people coming up saying thanks. You know, so, yeah, I'm really happy. Everybody's, I felt like we got the balance right. And a lot of that is Doc Shaner. I mean, he just has so much sincerity and beauty in the way he depicts character. You know, when you see it, you see Johnny and you go, wow, that's the kid. He lives and breathes, you know. He does kids really well, which not a lot of artists can do. And I've done this before, you know. I wrote Batman 66, and that was a big responsibility. It's like I've got a lot of people's childhood in my hands at that point, and I don't want to screw it up, but I just try to stay true to what I really liked. It's not about the details. It's about keeping the character consistent. You don't make the character do something they wouldn't do. People don't mind if you change a boot here or a cape there or something like that, as long as they're essential to who they were.
Now, you were telling me before that you brought in Dino Boy as a result of the artwork. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, when Evan Shaner was doing all the designs and showing how they'd all look, for promotion purposes and just for his own sense of how to approach the whole story. He kept drawing Dino Boy in there. I'm like, Evan, Dino Boy's not in the story. Until finally our editor, Marie, just checked with Dan, like, Evan really wants to draw dinosaurs. Can we put Dino Boy in there? And he goes, yeah, sure. And I was like, good, because actually Dino Boy's Lost Valley of Time works perfectly in with the whole thing, and it became an important set piece in the overall story. So, and then we revisit Dino Boy a few times. He's still out there with Ugg running around looking for his parents.
Now, you did something really classic that I was surprised by, was talking about the origin of Space Ghost.
Yeah.
Talk about that, because that's, you know, there's a case where you could have had all the original fans who we've never seen his face before. All of a sudden we see his face and we know his origin. Talk about bringing that to light and making that a part of the history.
Well, part of the thing of showing Space Ghost's face, actually I can sign that while I'm talking.
Sure, I didn't want to interrupt at all.
It's okay. You can listen to it. You know, there were designs that showed Space Ghost under the cowl, and we were looking at it, and the only thing we changed was to make him a little more alien. We thought, well, let's like, his eyes are slightly different. He's kind of got this silverish hair. But I wanted to, I did this approach with all the parts of it, where I would look at it, what was there, and they never gave you an origin. And I was like, why is there a ghost planet with this one building on it where his spaceship is? You know, and it's like, are the Herculoids in the same solar system? I start thinking about it. And then that all started falling in together with Omicron, the big threat. You know, I realized, oh, what if this decimate? What if this was actually a bustling, like, center of a solar system, and this threat is what wiped it all out, and Space Ghost is the last of his kind? Because of more reverse engineering, I'm looking at Jan and Jace's uniforms, and it's like, they've got very consistent uniforms, and Space Ghost is the one who seems different. And I don't know if anybody had ever worked out a backstory when they first put the cartoon together. Yeah, I mean, it still just looks like Alex Toth just coming up with brilliant Alex Toth designs, you know? But it seemed kind of natural, like, oh, maybe he actually wore this uniform, and this is what the Space Force was, and maybe he's trying to rebuild it with them, you know?
One of the things I really noticed was the details and allusions to stuff that had happened in the cartoons and things like that, like Amzot and Quasar and things like that, the different planets from the Herculoids.
Yeah.
How familiar were you before you started the series? Were you a fan of it before?
Yeah, I love the Herculoids. And, in different versions of them, they had called the planet either Quasar or Amzot. And then I realized that could be a fun nod to both if I kept them. And so I needed to explain. I was looking at the cartoons, trying to figure out a backstory for them. And then the one thing that seemed consistent is the Herculoids hate robots.
Yeah.
Like a robot, sometimes there's not even a story said. A robot just shows up on the planet and they start smashing it. It's like, why? What was it doing? And then I was like, what if there's two sister planets, you know? And one of them is where all the people are, and it's, you know, they get to the point of singularity where AI becomes sentient. And of course, in our version, the AI immediately start murdering everybody on the planet. And our family flees over to the Herculoids world, and they kind of swear off technology and kind of become these Luddites, you know, who fight the way they fight. It works so surprisingly well. It's like, I kind of half think that, like, somebody must have figured this out before, because it's what it feels like. But it went really naturally, and then it gave us a nice natural conflict when they first meet Frankenstein Jr., and they immediately assume that's the menace and start just wailing on it and take him down.
The series ended so well. You had a nice, satisfying conclusion to it.
Good.
And now we've got new books coming out, and I see my favorite, Birdman, is going to be in one of the upcoming books.
Yeah.
So talk about where the franchise is now. You've got, is it an ongoing book that you're doing now? Is it an occasional? How is Future Quest going to move forward?
Now it seems to be a revolving anthology. Like, I'm starting off with the Space Ghost story. Like you said, I believe Phil Hester and Steve Rude are doing Birdman. And then I've got some standalones, like Ron Randall and I have done a Galaxy Trio, where you find out the Galaxy Trio's backstory, and you find out they're criminals.
Yeah, how about that?
And there's some neat stuff coming up like that, Impossibles. You know, the Herculoids again. I even squeezed the Herculoids a little bit in Space Ghost story, because it's like, why not? They're out there. I like thinking he just drops by every now and then and checks on them. It'll be coming out, and I'm hoping it all follows out of the first 12 issues. So I'm hoping everybody will stick around, and, you know, I know everybody had their favorites that they like to look for, but I hope that now that they've kind of seen it all together, they'll try out the other ones that they may not have been into, you know.
Now I got to ask, of course, you just mentioned that. Which one is your favorite?
Johnny Quest.
Johnny Quest.
I was always, as much as I love all of them, Johnny Quest was always the most meaningful to me. My graphic novel, The Interman, you can see DNA of Johnny Quest all through it, because I was just such a huge fan of that show and Doug Wildey's work. So, and I got to know Doug Wildey in his last years. That was great. That one's pretty meaningful to me. And it's the reason Quest is the kind of anchor piece of the name. You know, that was the first big Hanna-Barbera cartoon, and they all kind of spin out from that, really.
I remember the first night that Johnny Quest was not on Friday night at 7:30. I cried.
Oh.
I was a kid, and I turned it on, and I said, there's no Johnny Quest. Where did he go?
Yeah.
And, you know, so ever I've seen, they did a remake of it and stuff like that. But I thought you touched into the classic tone of Johnny Quest, and all of them really have that, and all the little allusions to do to stuff. There was a lot of allusions to Birdman and his voice and things like that. I got all those things made that real special thing. So I'm so happy it's continuing on.
Yeah, with Johnny, I didn't want to see any more updates that just dated it. You know, that's the thing I couldn't take. It's like, just when you start changing them and give Race a kid, and you know, and not that I object to girls being around, obviously, but it's like Race, not a family guy in my mind. He's not even sure he wants to be with the Quest, really. He's like, you know, he says in the cartoon, "I'm supposed to play nursemaid or something here." You know, he's a hired secret agent killer, and I just thought, well, we'll just boil it down to what's classic about it, so you could drop them in almost any time. And they've got a very classic look about them. Like, nothing about their clothes or their look looks weird in any time. So they're kind of great that way. They're good designs as well as just good characters. You know?
Now, is it a monthly book? Is it a quarterly book? How many? It's monthly now?
I should pay better attention to that. But yeah, it's monthly.
Yeah, I hope so, because I'll be buying it every time it's out, so I can't wait for it to come out every month. Is this ongoing? Is there a limited number of issues? How are you going to do? Do you know how it's going to work?
All the comics are always ongoing until they're not. You know, they always approve books like in batches of 6 or 12, for the most part. So, you know, it's an ongoing. And as long as it sells steady, it'll still be an ongoing. So
Phil is doing some of the writing in it, too. So
yeah.
Do you guys work together when you do that? I mean, does this script, do you look it over? Do you guys work together on how the things all
we talk about it. You know, we don't, like, he doesn't have to do anything I establish, really. But he read through it, and, you know, and I think he liked what was there. He and I are, like, the same age and like a lot of the same stuff, you know, so... I'd be surprised if Phil just suddenly did a wildly different take than what I was doing on it.
Well, it's good because it's so much fun, and obviously you've got a line of folks that. Are there other projects you're working on that we should know about?
There are, but they're not ready to announce yet. So I hope everybody will follow me on Twitter. I'm just Jeff Parker on there, because right now I'm redoing my website and that's not up. So all my announcements are going to start there or link to articles there.
Well, keep up the wonderful stuff. I am so enjoying Future Quest and I can't wait for other stuff you do.
Thanks, Wayne. I really appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
It's a pleasure to welcome to the podcast Jeff Parker.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Excellent.
You're not going to let me talk about what you're working on.
Well, we're done here, Wayne. All right. Keep coming, buddy.
Yeah, okay. Well, you actually write Aquaman and Batman 66, which are great books. But I did want to mention, you have done some stuff in the past that I really enjoyed. When you worked at Marvel, you did Agents of Atlas, which I really liked.
Well, thank you.
And then X-Men First Class, which was – I was heartbroken when they canceled that series. I just thought that was the best X book I ever saw, because I actually could relate to these characters the way you did them.
Oh, good.
And also, you did a trade paperback called Underground that I really liked.
Oh, thanks for reading that.
Oh, that was great. I really enjoyed that, the whole business about being in the cave. And not only was it – were you in a – have dangerous people involved, but you were in a dangerous situation. And I just thought that was a gripping story. I liked that so much.
Yeah, the nice thing there was Steve and I did a lot of research, and yeah, we had to stack it so that cave had every possible dangerous thing going on, but, you know, it's all very plausible, you know, and of course someone's actually shooting at them, which doesn't help, but, you know, we didn't have to do anything, you know, like fantastic to make it exciting. It's just the actual thing. It's like, it's a perfect real life adventure kind of scenario to use.
Mm-hmm. Do you like to write those occasionally, or do you prefer superheroes?
Oh, no. I every time I do, and you'll see, because I've, you know, like at Emerald City, O'Neill announced this new book that I'm doing. Every time I do something, usually like an original creation, I don't do superheroes because it's like, one, no one wants to read any except for Marvel and DC's anyway. Mm-hmm. So why? You know, but really I like doing a big variety of things. So I try to pick some genre or some type of story I never get to do. And that was the case definitely with Underground. Mm-hmm. Things like Bucko, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, like being an actor. An actor doesn't want to play the same role all the time.
Well, I hope not, yeah.
Well, some people do. But a lot of people actually just want to get a chance to flex their acting muscles and play someone very different. And I always think when I see writers sort of typecast, you know, they're all writing the same kind of stuff all the time. And that worries me a little bit about, you know, is that really the only stories they can tell?
Yeah, me too. I have no idea why they would do that. I mean, I understand you do get typecast and people think you only write horror and we're only going to ask you to do horror. But that's why every time I get a chance to do something that's different than what I've done before, I generally take it because I don't want everybody to think, well, he does the retro superheroes. That's his thing or, you know, whatever. The weird catch is you have to get known for something to be in demand. Mm-hmm. But then you've immediately got to juke and, you know, kind of and switch it up, or you will be relegated to that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you did Underground, you kind of were ahead of the current trend of people going over into the other companies and selling stories that DC or Marvel may not necessarily want. And when I read Underground several years ago, I just thought it was great. And then now I keep seeing other people like Mr. Snyder going over to Image and doing some stuff. And I think about your Underground, which was kind of ahead of the curve. I just think that was so interesting that you were way ahead of other people to be able to sell stories to other companies.
Well, it could sell better, too. That would help. But,
yeah.
I'm always right ahead of the thing that really catches fire. Now suddenly Image is blowing up like crazy. And I'm like, hey, wait. Well, they're doing it again for the first time since the 90s, you know, and I better get back over there again. But but then again, that's also a finite story. Probably to really catch on with that, I've got to go over there with some kind of series, you know, because that's what people want. Mm-hmm. Or they want a series of miniseries, what people tend to refer to as Hellboy style, where it's always going to be, okay, you know you're going to get a trade out of this story arc, and it's going to build that way instead of just a monthly thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we go ahead and get to your DC work, because I'm really anxious to talk about this stuff. Aquaman has long been a favorite of mine, and I have always enjoyed the character, but I've always felt that people struggle with him. You know, what do you do? I mean, this is why, you know, Big Bang Theory ridiculed him, you know, and other people just kind of come in and they don't know what to do. And I was really grateful that Mr. Johns kind of laid the groundwork for you to be able to come in and use the character. He's really kind of moved him into the present. What was it like? I mean, did you have to pitch to get Aquaman?
No, they asked me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was nice because I hate pitching. Okay. I don't like pitching, and because it's always you know there's this thing they do all the companies now where they'll send out and try to get people to audition for a book, so you don't even know who you're pitching against. I just hate that. I'd like feel like you've heard of me, just ask me to do the book, I still had to kind of tell them, okay, here's the kind of thing I would do. And, you know, then they kind of come back with, what could it include, things like this? But, you know, and then and then if we can see eye to eye, it's, you know, you're fine and go ahead. But I had read Jeff's stuff on Aquaman. And I was like, hey, I like this. He didn't try to make Aquaman something he wasn't. He just embraced the concept. And I'm like, why is this so hard? Don't turn him into Game of Thrones. Don't turn him into, I don't know, Columbo under the sea or whatever, you know. It's like, just, it's Aquaman. He talks to whales sometimes. He does cool stuff. There's Atlanteans. He's really strong. There's plenty there to work with. And I was very happy it went that way. So, and I thought it was pretty easy to get my mind in the right frame to work on it. And I always liked him, too. I always, as a kid, you know, I loved going to the ocean, and I loved sitting there and, you know, and pretending like I'm Aquaman and stuff, along with the other big ones like Batman, Superman, Spider-Man. So, yeah, I screw those guys on the Big Bang Theory, one. Let me get that out of the way right now. Also, what's that other crappy show, Entourage?
Oh, yeah.
What the hell with them? I will show you why Aquaman is cool. Jeff Hardy did, and I'm going to keep doing it. And I've got Paul Pelletier, the most amazing artist, working with me, and that guy just draws the hell out of it. The thing I'm really excited about, I just got through a minute ago doing a bunch of final notes on the lettering for issue 28, and it's the one where Aquaman goes to his high school reunion. And it, so it's got a lot of, like, just real people stuff in it. And kind of the fun is the fact that, hey, the superhero actually decided to come to his high school reunion. Because I wanted to take advantage of the fact that everybody knows who he is. He doesn't have a secret identity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so he comes back, and it's kind of like a rock star showing up at his reunion and how that all plays out. And Paul just drew the hell out of it. It looks so good, and all the acting is so nuanced and spot on. Yeah, everybody's going to love it. This is the kind of thing I used to love to read.
Well, one of the things about your writing that I always enjoy is that you make the characters vibrant and believable. Situations like that, you know, I haven't seen a time when I've seen a superhero go to a high school reunion. So, you know, right there, you've automatically made him someone that we can relate to because, you know, some of us get to go to a high school reunion.
Exactly. And you will relate to certain parts of it. But one, the one that everybody hates is seeing somebody and not knowing who they are. Because they've changed, and you're like, please get close enough so I can see your name tag. And Mirror gets to go, too. So it just adds to the fun of it.
It's interesting, too, because as a couple, you know, one of the things DC has recently kind of been frowning upon are couples in relationships. But Aquaman and Mirror work so well.
They do.
I'm so grateful that you're keeping them going and everything's going well with them.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it does... I think their thing is just against marriage, and I am in complete – Colleen Coover and I were talking about this at the studio the other day, and we talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. Once you marry off a character, it does reduce some story options for you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if you just want to have a little romantic interest with somebody else, you can't do it anymore because it makes, you know, Superman look like a creep or whatever. Mm-hmm. Aquaman, for some reason – just Mirror is just a great character and always has been. You know, you read the old stories and everything. She's great in those too. Mm-hmm. And I think Jeff particularly really gave her a lot of dynamic going on in the modern story. So it's like, boy, I could not wait to write her. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to step up her role even more because she tries to help him balance out his dealings with the Atlanteans, which, you know, he just doesn't consider himself that well suited to be a king. He'd rather be a straight up superhero.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing that always entertains me about Mira is how different she is from Arthur. You know, she's always been seen as sort of a ruler. I mean, she grew up that way, and she's got powers that are very different from his. And so the two of them, they don't, it's not like, well, Batman and Robin are kind of, it's not the same thing, but you've always got people who are kind of like they're working with people who are very similar to them. But the fact that they are very different people, I think, is what makes this such an engaging couple to see and to read about.
Yeah, and one of the nice things with them is you can do, and here's what I think tends to work with superheroes, and I did this all the time at Marvel. You're trying to play up something on a grand scale with these superpowered people that really, when you kind of cut through it, is a very normal dynamic in your own life. And that, to me, that's the way they work best. Like, you know, I'll have Mira just suddenly fly off the handle and go do something. And Arthur doesn't even bother to yell at her about it because he knows it's like, I might as well go yell at the tide to stop coming in twice a day. But, you know, it's just, she's going to do that. He's already made peace with that sort of thing. And, you know, when you have that sort of situation, everybody like, oh yeah, that's kind of like the way it is in our relationship. And but it's fun to have it with people who can throw a wave at somebody or something like that.
Well, it makes it more real to me.
Me too.
You know, I just love the way that they do that kind of stuff, the way that they interact. You know, I'm happy to see that them, you know, and see them blossoming so much and being, you know, well-liked characters again. And I just, you know, I heard somebody once say, you know, what was it about Jeff Johns' writing that you wanted a copy, or Jeff Johns' time on the book that you wanted a copy? And they said, well, the sales figures was what they wanted to do. And, of course, Mr. Johns does have his have a big entourage that follows him around. Was that a little daunting to you to pick up Aquaman like that?
No. If it was done, and that's no disrespect to Jeff. It's just, if I'm going to get stage shy about that sort of thing, I might as well hang it up and leave. Mm-hmm. I've had to follow a lot of people. And, yeah, I had to follow Loeb on Hulk mm-hmm. and stuff. It's like at some point you just go, yep, I'm going to go in and do my thing. And and I'm the best at being Jeff Parker. So, you know, it's like I don't even consider it a competition. It's just like, and now here's the phase where me and Pelletier are going to take it, you know. Or mm-hmm. So, and I'm sure everybody who kind of goes in with it like that, it would be weird if you, I don't know, you know, sure, you don't want to follow Alan Moore on Swamp Thing. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's like everybody is a raving egomaniac in this industry, and they can all kind of pull it together and go do their own thing usually.
Mm-hmm.
Or you would be reading some really tepid writing. It is what I do see, though, sometimes people build up the characters in their heads. And that's another thing. You have to have a healthy disregard even for characters you really like, or you won't do anything interesting with them. You'll kind of make them stoic and perfect, and then mm-hmm. suddenly all the life drains out of their stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird walk where you have to go in like really caring about the character and at the same time not caring about the character.
Mm-hmm. Are you going to be putting him back in the Justice League, or is he going to stay pretty much in the Aquaman? Because I also heard there was like a spinoff possibly coming.
There is a spinoff. It's Aquaman and the Others, mm-hmm. emphasis on the Others, because I think a lot of people liked that group and mm-hmm. and they realized they had a little traction and they could actually get this. You know, it's really hard for either of the big two to get new characters going. People just want to see the ones they grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
Or even if they're kind of like introducing them to their children or anything like that, they still like, here, you read the same thing I read, which I don't know why people do that. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes it really hard for, strangely enough, these very successful companies to introduce something new. And mm-hmm. others seem to be catching on. So I think it's nice that they're actually going with it. I would assume Aquaman would like kind of hang around at first to be the name and then kind of sneak out the back. But who knows? Maybe he's going to be in the thing the whole time. But we're coordinating to make sure our books make sense together.
That just makes me smile because, you know, I remember when Mr. Johns took over Green Lantern and people said Green Lantern couldn't possibly survive. It was just a book that couldn't be done.
And then look how many Lanterns popped up out of it. You know?
Yeah, he did this huge spectrum of Green Lanterns, and now Aquaman's not only going to have one but two books going on. So I find that just – there's no such thing as a bad character. There are just bad treatments of a character, I think. Sometimes.
I agree, and wouldn't it be cool if Mira got her own story too? But, you know? Mira would have an awesome comic book. It would be great. But yeah, he's still in the Justice League.
Oh, okay. So he will show up.
Justice League without Aquaman? What? Yeah, not even the Justice League at that point.
That's true.
A bunch of hobos.
So as far as like plans for the comic moving forward, and of course no spoilers or anything like that, but do you have some like hints that you can throw out as to what we might see in the book moving forward?
Yeah, I want to explore a little more of Atlantis's ancient past. I always like when Jeff was doing that, and I think it's really rich. Now I've got my whole working theory for how the lost continent of Atlantis worked and why people became amphibious, things like that, that I hope to get in.
Hmm.
One of the big things is we're going to be recreating some characters who haven't been in print in a long time and bringing them back in a new way. So I'm going to try to really kind of add a roster to the DC universe. I feel like there's a lot of room, especially, you know, with the clean slate New 52 thing. Mm-hmm. Like, well, you know, what? There's room to bring back things and bring back some characters who I don't think particularly were ever portrayed interestingly, and now we can bring them back in a new way if you finally get some time to really think about it. And that happens relatively fast in the story.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm really looking forward to it. I think you're doing a great job. I've been reading Aquaman ever since the New 52 started. In fact, I bought all the New 52 comics.
They were good.
Oh, yeah, they were all great. The very beginning and thereon. I've only stopped buying them when they've been canceled, unfortunately. But the Aquaman one has been a great book. I just think it's such great. And you're doing a great job. And picking up from Mr. Johns is in my mind, is no small task. But you're doing it very well. And I just think Aquaman is terrific.
Cool.
So why don't we move into Batman 66? This is talk about a totally different book. This is digital first, and of course, I grew up in the 60s actually watching Adam West on Batman. So for me, I was kind of interested to see how this book was going to happen. Do you want to talk a little bit about how the book came to be and your involvement with it?
They contacted me. This was pretty interesting. I was actually, my family was visiting with artist Jonathan Case's family, who was staying down at the beach here in Oregon. When I got the message, and usually I kind of, like a jerk, I sit there and wait to get back to an editor, you know, like, I'm not going to answer right away. Well, and it's mainly because I have to stew on something and kind of daydream about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if I can't immediately kind of start to figure out how I would approach a project, you know, I bow out because I don't want to just do something just because I'm offered. I want to be able to contribute something. Batman 66, I scrambled to get on the phone and, you know, like, yes, don't you give that to anybody else. I want it now. Because I just felt like, one, I was really worried that somebody else might not approach it the right way. I know that, again, going back to that giant ego thing I was talking about earlier, but I was afraid somebody would see it as, aha, we're going to have all these great jokes at Batman's expense. And I don't feel like that's what the series was about. In the series, you know, everybody takes Batman too seriously, you know, and it's pretty funny. But when I think it worked best was in the earlier episodes that Lorenzo Simple would write, and where the plots actually were straight ahead Batman plots. It's just the execution of it, you know, would have all this kind of camp and humor in it. And I like that a lot. You know, like I really like Frank Gorshin just getting out there and just like like a lunatic bouncing all over the place. And just the way he would bring every aspect of his, probably up his whole entertainment career into it. It's like, you know, Gorshin, he could juggle, sing, whatever, didn't matter. It's why Sammy Davis Jr. should have also been a villain. And I hate that he popped out of the window one time, but I wish he'd been a villain. They probably just couldn't figure out who to make him, or he was too busy. You know, I really wanted to get that across with it. It's like, no, this Batman is really cool, and we're going to treat it that we're going to treat it like the show, but with it, if the show had a crazy big budget and could get any actor they wanted and could get stunts and all kinds of stuff. And so far that approach has really worked. And again, I was right there with Jonathan, right? When, Jim Chadwick, the editor, asked, like, can you think of any artists you think would be good for this? And I'm looking at Jonathan thinking, I know this guy named Jonathan Case, and it was just a coincidence. But at the time, Jonathan had been talking about, he had just gotten through with a couple of really heavy kind of projects, like the Green River Killer and stuff like that. And he wanted to do something much more lighthearted, because he was tired of things where people get murdered graphically. And I knew his sensibilities were just right for this, and they were. I mean, once he sent in some work, they immediately were bowled over by him. And, you know, he immediately went from, hey, I got this guy I'd like to do a story to, he's the lead artist. We want him doing everything, you know. Like, so Jonathan does as much as he has time for, but he just nails it. He nails the likenesses and everything. Julie Newmar emailed him a bunch of pictures of herself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Oh, wow. Now, see, the interesting thing is apparently it's taken off. I mean, well, you've got the DVDs coming out sometime this year, we've learned.
Oh, yeah.
And then the action figures came out. DC released a bunch of Batman 66 type action figures with Adam West type things. And, you know, honestly, when you say Batman to the general public, people still say Adam West, although they might say Christian Bale more now than they used to. But to me, it's interesting because I think that you've really captured the spirit of the show very well. The one thing I do want to ask you about, and this may be something a little too technical for your part of it, but the thing I always get a kick of when you get the comic and you download it like to my iPad, you swipe your finger across it, and like a word balloon will come in, and another thing will happen, and stuff like that. And I always enjoy that because this is the first time DC, to my knowledge, has used that technology. And basically all you're doing is just adding a layer as you go through sometimes. And I'd never seen DC do that before. We'd just seen the flat page. Did they suggest that, or how did that come to be as far as the digital comic?
They knew they wanted to do that early on, even though they weren't sure exactly what they wanted to do. But they knew that this property would be right for it because, you know, you're already conditioned to big bam, pow, all this stuff.
Yeah.
So it was exactly the perfect thing that already existed, yet you could experiment with. So then they said, we're not sure what we want to do. Comixology had some ideas. But they then needed our story to start playing with. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of became a thing on everybody chipping in. Like, I would try to anticipate stuff and write it into the script, like, mm-hmm. so that it wouldn't be a hard thing where Jonathan or somebody wouldn't have to go back and do a whole bunch of extra drawing. He did in the first one, way more than you typically see. Mm-hmm. And we were also trying to make sure it wasn't limited animation. You know, mm-hmm. we just wanted it to be, it's supposed to be enhanced storytelling, and you're supposed to, and Jonathan figured out a few things, like how to make it look like when you swipe, you know, the Batmobile zooming all the way across the page, and that was kind of cool.
That was cool.
And
I love that.
Yeah, we made a few little breakthroughs like that, and he would do just little things like color shifts and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And then other artists would start catching on, and Jim Chadwick, who has to think about it all the time, he offers up a whole slew of suggestions every time he gives notes back. And now I've kind of backed out of that sort of thing. I write it into the script, and then if they want to use my idea, they do. If it seems like too much work, they leave it out. But everybody chimes in, and then Comixology on their end, it's a lot of extra work for them too. And so they tinker with it a little more. One of the main things we do, though, is, and I as a writer, really appreciate this, is we'll add in the dialogue as it's being said, so you can't read it out of order. And I love that. All the time I see reviews of something I've done, and I think, did the person actually read the comic book? Because they missed everything that was being said or shown in the comic. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, because they stood there in the store and blasted through it real fast, and here's what I remember it being. Mm-hmm. You can't gloss over stuff when it's appearing to you. It makes a lot of work. You know, at first I thought, this is going to be too much swiping. People aren't going to want to do this. But it turned out that, you know, one, it makes the story last longer for people. So they like that. You know, mm-hmm. it's kind of more value. And they feel a little more involved. And I think we kind of are more and more hitting this kind of sweet spot that actually shows you what you can do with a digital story, but yet doesn't warp it into something it's not. It's still comics, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's wonderful to see. It adds a little bit of, it's not a motion comic, but it adds just enough change that it's not like a regular comic. It feels a little more active, and that's something I think I really like about it. So,
it surprised
really great.
Me. I really thought when we were first talking about it, I went, in the back of my head, I was like, oh, well, okay, I'll do this, but the real comic will be the print comic. I'm not even going to pay attention to this thing. And then after the first build was made by Comixology, immediately I thought, this is really fun. Like, this is way better than I thought it was going to be. And then, as you see, the public went the same way, mm-hmm. where everybody was complaining until it came out. And then immediately everybody was like, why can't we have this for every issue? No, it's like, because it takes a long time to make. And that's part of the reason we've slowed down the digital production so that it's every other week instead of every week, mm-hmm. because it's just so much work on everybody. And, you know, to get the thing out, you've just got to like get some more time going. So it's been slowed down, and unfortunately the price went up because you have to pay the artist more because they're putting in more time.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to execute it so that you still have a page that works perfectly for print, you know, even though it leaves a lot of that stuff out. It's a real mental exercise, but I think that's where we're all going. As you know, if we want comics to be a widely accepted medium, we've got to consider people reading it on readers and iPads. And this kind of helps get us to that point. I don't know that every kind of story will work for it, but it definitely works good for the tone of our comic.
It's so worth it. It's just something a little special that adds to it and just makes it a little different that I like. Now, as far as like villains go, I noticed you've pretty much stuck to the original villains in the show. Are you going to reach a point at which you're going to introduce other villains or like new people that we haven't seen before?
Gosh, I can't say anything without spoiling.
Okay, well then don't answer that.
I'm making gestures you can't see because they're completely audio. So
okay.
Just stay tuned.
Okay. Well, I'm interested because your grasp of the characters and even the villains is such that I think that you could come up with a good one. So that's my opinion. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, thank you.
As far as the sales go, it seems to be selling very well because, you know, DC has this thing where they get double dipping out of me. I buy the digital version, then I go to the store and buy the paper copy. And so they're getting a lot of money out of my wallet because of that. And so I think that this is a huge success from what I can see. And I know a lot of people who don't happen to care for the New 52 who also dive in and buy this because they think this is something it's more standard in the sense of what they like out of Batman. So I think this is going to be going on for quite a long time. I think you guys are doing a great job with it. And, man, I'm just curious to see what you guys are going to do next.
Oh, yeah. It's selling nice and steady, and it completely is one that, you know, adults love it, but you can hand it to a kid, and you don't have to feel bad at all. Mm-hmm. My son is generally my test reader for stuff. You know, I'll run things by him, and then he'll bring it up to me later or talk about it. And, you know, and I know if I plead, he's a tough little customer because he reads a lot of comics and, you know, he expects good stuff. So I really have to make sure it's working for him first. But I love the fact that it's so nice again to have one book that I can hand without reservation to a kid and, you know, and just walk away knowing it's like, I don't have to say, sorry about some of the nude violence in this one panel, even though, you know, but the show itself would occasionally get a little adult at times.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's like, so if people are remembering it as not, they're wrong. They need to go back and look at it because, like, there's one where Lee Meredith, mm-hmm. she was on there, but not as Catwoman. She was playing Cleopatra in mm-hmm. a King Tut episode. Mm-hmm. And she, like, at the end of the thing, Bruce Wayne is breaking it off with her, you know, saying he's not going to date her, even though he's walked her all the way up to her apartment. And then he decides to go in anyway and kind of turns around at the camera and goes, well, can't live by crime fighting alone. I went, whoa, Batman. Totally going in to close the deal here.
And as
a kid, I just paid no attention to that. And I thought,
that's all right. Who knows what that means when you're a kid, you know? So
exactly.
That's kind of funny. Now, one last thing I want to ask is that you had Batgirl in an individual issue. Are we going to see more Batgirl going forward?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot more Batgirl coming. I'm giving her a lot of the 10-pager backups. Mm-hmm. And then Jonathan is coming back with another big three-parter that has her teaming up with Batman and Robin for the first time in the book. So we get a lot of mileage with Batgirl. So I'm curious to see. I don't usually pay attention to, like, what sells more than others, but I suspect when her episode, her things are going to, like, start to jump on the little graph, you know.
Hmm. Well, I'd like to see it because I always enjoyed, you know, Yvonne Craig as a Batgirl, and I thought she was wonderful. Though she always spent her time kicking all the time. She never actually punched anybody.
No, she kicked, and she would swing. She would do the elbow thing with somebody so she could do a kick, and then she would stop and pose with her fists on her hips and laugh at everybody like Errol Flynn. Always really liked that.
Well, it's a great book. You're doing a great job with it, so keep it up, boy. This is going to be good. Maybe Batgirl will get her own book eventually. You never know.
Yeah.
Never know. But anyway, are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
Let's see. I am doing, for more kid-friendly stuff, I am doing some Angry Birds stories that'll start to be out later in the year.
Oh.
IDW is going to carry those for Rovio, so it'll be coming out through them. But I really do them directly for Rovio, the people who make Angry Birds.
Mm-hmm.
The Oni thing will be announced at Emerald City. And, oh, and of course, I don't know if you saw that I'm... after King's Watch at Dynamite, I'm going into mm-hmm. Flash Gordon with Evan Shaner.
Oh.
Yeah, so that I'm pretty excited about. It looks great. Every page that comes in is a blast.
Mm-hmm. Very cool, because Flash Gordon has some of the things that, like, the 60s Batman does. There are some people who just are married to certain Flash Gordons. Like, when the TV show was coming on Sci-Fi, they had this... He was more like a teenager, a regular teenager. And the one guy told me, if he doesn't have a horn on his head and a ray gun in his hand, he's not Flash Gordon. And I said, well, you know, that was like 50 years ago, I tell you.
Well, he'll like this because he definitely has a ray gun.
I don't know good.
What the horn on the head thing is, but
well,
not sure what that is, but he's got the ray gun, I promise.
Well, he's got like a helmet that had like a horn that was leaning back kind of thing somewhere.
Oh,
one of the times
No, that was Buck Rogers.
Oh, well.
That's the other thing. A lot of people confuse the two, mm-hmm. and they think, well, it's like they're both the space heroes. Like, but actually, Flash Gordon wasn't a space hero. He was specifically on the planet Mongo. you know. Mm-hmm. He didn't really go anywhere else. He was just went to Mongo and went all over Mongo. Whereas Buck Rogers zooms around in space wearing his little Adam Strange-looking gear on top and all that.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, Aquaman and Batman 66 and Flash Gordon now and other good things. I would highly recommend people go back and find Underground and pick it up if they can.
Thank you.
I wish they'd put that out. Is that out digitally at all by any chance?
It is out digitally. If you go to Underground the Comic, you can actually get the whole thing on the honor system. So you can pay what you feel it's worth. Mm-hmm. Steve and I set that up so that, you know, it could still keep getting out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I recommend that to people because that was a good story. It was, I'm a story guy. I do follow certain characters sometimes, but I'm looking for a good story all the time. And that was a great story. That one just had me gripped from the start. And I just thought that's a good one. I like to recommend it to people, but I'm glad to know about that it's available digitally because I haven't found too many people with paper copies left. So
yeah,
I'm glad to hear
that.
Very good. Well, Jeff, keep up the great work. Boy, it's great to talk with you. Thanks. And great fun with all this work that you're doing. I just can't wait to see what's going on with Batman and Aquaman and your other things soon. So, you know, much success as you go forward.
Thanks, Wayne. Thanks for having me on.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.